You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in rainy Cocoa, Florida.
Thank goodness.
Somebody's paying attention to the weather, right? Me. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right, on 1510wwbc.com. Can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we archive the shows there as well. And then we have it on all of our social media as well. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And then also on our website, SitaMediaInc.com.
I tell you, Ellen, I had a fabulous Mother's Day. Started out with Kimberly taking me out to eat for dinner with Madison, my granddaughter. And then the next day, Jasmine took me for a manicure and pedicure. Then the next day, my best friend, myself, Sita Biggie, treated me to a concert in South Florida at Margate, and we stayed at the Hilton. And then I took my sister and danced along with hundreds of people.
It
was good. And then I came back yesterday, and Jasmine again invited me for another dinner, and lots of flowers, and somebody sent me some flowers, and I don't know who it's from.
Well, I don't know. There was a lot of people that kind of alluded to possibly sending them to you, so I had a couple of ideas.
Okay.
You know, other than Ahmed, I thought maybe it was our good friend Selvi.
I don't know who it's from, but they're beautiful.
Yes.
And, no, Selvi would have said.
Yeah.
But it's okay. You know, at this point,
You were loved.
Two-thirds of my life is over. So the next one-third is about peace and love and unity. And if somebody thinks they can send some flowers to somebody, I'll take them.
That's right.
So today, for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, 15 years on air. It's amazing.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Well, I want to tell you about my exciting news really quickly. We got invited to play a gala on October 4th, and they just started selling tickets now. For Project Response. And it was just this weekend. So it was very exciting to be able to be.
Okay, what date and what time for our listeners?
It's October 4th, Saturday, October 4th. And it's from 6 to 10, 5:30, I think the doors open. And it's going to be at the Grand Manor where we played before.
And what does Project Response do?
Project Response is a not-for-profit organization that takes care of all of the men that are experiencing issues with HIV and AIDS. So they're a support group. They do testing. They provide a whole lot of free opportunities.
So they're about education and opportunities.
Education and opportunity for
great.
People. Promoting inclusion and community connection.
Wonderful. So we would continue to help. So
yes.
For listeners who are tuning in today, you know, yesterday was Mother's Day. And for some reason, my heart was thinking about my friend, Denise Salagor. Denise has been my friend over 15 years, and she is like a member of my family. And I saw a Facebook post that she had put up about her mom who turned 104 years old. And I thought about Denise and the wisdom and the experience that her mom has passed on to not just her immediate family, but all of us. And I canceled my first guest today so I could give that segment to my friend Denise and her mom. In the second segment, we have an author who booked our show a few months ago. Her book is called April's Heart. It's a love story. And that author's name is Dolores Grisalfi, and she goes by the name Shiloh. So we'll speak to her in a little bit, Shiloh Fair. But I think I should tell our listeners that our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we talk to people from all walks of life and give them a platform to talk about whatever is going on in this world. whether you have experience and wisdom to share with our listeners, you want to open a business, you want to write a book, you want to run for office, you want to keep your friendships intact. And, you know, friendship is something that does not stay by itself. You have to water it, Ellen. You have to take care of it. You have to feed it. And Denise and I did that over the years. Even though she moved a few times away from Florida, I love her from my heart. And she's on the phone calling in from Connecticut with her beautiful mom. And I think her mom goes by Sally, who's 104 years old. Denise, thank you for calling in to be part of our show again.
It's wonderful to be back, and thank you very much for inviting me.
You know, Ellen and I remember the days when you used to come on our show when we first started. You were our education consultant. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before we start chatting about Mama, who is 104 years old.
Yes, I'm certainly blessed. Well, I'm a retired educator and school administrator. I retired in 2010 after a 36 long, beautiful career. I miss it. I love it. But, you know, I'm almost 75 and it's time to move on. And now I take care of my mama.
Well, you know, the universe was lined up this morning because right after I spoke to you, I saw this picture on it says Amazon is now selling these granny pods for your back of your house. For $31,000, I'm like thinking, oh, Denise again. So, you know, I've spoken to people in the nursing homes over the years that I've worked in nursing facilities in Indiana, Chicago, now Florida, back again to Florida. And a lot of the folks who are over 100 or in their 90s always told me when I asked that question, how did you live to be this age? They would say, oatmeal, Jesus, thinking positive, and giving back. What is Sally's secret? Tell us a little bit about your mom. She was born May 8, 1921 in Puerto Rico. Her father owned a bakery shop. She graduated from the University of Puerto Rico and then left for New York City. She went to college back in the day. What else can we can you tell us about Sally?
I mean, who in their right mind, how many women graduated from college in 1942? And then she left for New York City in 1946, and she landed a job with Chase Manhattan Bank in their Wilson Trust Department. And there shortly after, she met my father in New York, married him. And then I came along in 1950, and Mama is retired from Bank of America. She moved on, or I don't know if Chase Manhattan was bought by B of A. And, you know, this is ironic. Today she still receives a pension from B of A and her secondary insurance. Now, they don't really do pensions anymore nowadays, but who would have ever thought?
She was certainly a trailblazer. So did she stay at Bank of America for all those years?
Yes, she retired. But when she retired, she took early retirement. I believe she was about 65. Upon retiring, she got her real estate license in California. And then she volunteered for a senior center for 10 years in California. I mean, she was always giving nonstop. She was not she's not the type, and still now, not the type to sit, watch TV, and twiddle her thumbs. And I think what kept her going and her secret to her longevity is not only her faith, which has guided her entire life, but our family closeness. I think family is so important nowadays, and it's something that has deteriorated along the line.
Now, how do you say your mom's name? I had a difficult time saying it because
it's like Providence, Rhode Island. It's Providencia.
Okay.
And because the last name was Sala, a lot of the women that she worked for, or a lot of her friends, because she had a lot of friends, they would call her Sally because they couldn't pronounce her name.
Now, and you know what I like about your mom is even though she left Puerto Rico and came to New York, where now people say New Rican, she kept her culture and she instilled that in you. And you have
not only that, mm-hmm. she moved her whole family from Puerto Rico when she was about 26 because she was making a decent salary. Now, remember, we're talking about the early 1940s where women, no matter how educated they were and where they were from, they were not going to make much money, okay? But she had a steady job, saved enough, and brought her parents, and they left, too, in the 1940s, my grandparents. So she kept her mom and dad and her siblings, all of her two younger siblings followed her. They married in New York as well. And then when everybody packed up in 1957 and left for California, they all moved again. It's amazing how when my mom and dad did something, my dad had a real good job opportunity with the steel union back in the late 50s. And we moved to California. So basically, I was like 7 years old, but I was raised there. But, you know, I look back now and I look at how my parents were not only trailblazers, but they worked so hard their whole life.
Yeah, they had good work ethic. So your mom, she is 104 years old. So she has outlived not just presidents, but senators and people she voted for. And I know she's a woman of faith and substance, but she also believed in our democracy, and she voted in pretty much all the elections that came her way.
You know what? When I took her to the voter registration office here, she was 101, and I finally took her to the clerk's office here in Connecticut. They were amazed, all the women in that office, and wanted pictures of her. It was hilarious. And the city councilwoman, it was our mayor, came out of her office and saw my mother there, and the ladies were talking, and they just all wanted pictures because I think she's one of the oldest here in our city.
She's probably one of the oldest in the United States, and she still walks. And you said that her memory, she still has some of her memory. It's intact. And
yes,
she lives with you. You take care of her. Ask her for us about what are some of the exciting and significant events that she remembers from the past. Is she close to you? Right.
No, she's not close to me.
Okay.
She really can't hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for you know, she's a little dementia.
Yeah.
But her was her first vote in the United States when she voted for FDR. It was her first vote in the United States. That was exciting. I think another great event for her is when my mom and dad saved enough money, and she still talks about it, how they bought their first, but it was a new, brand new home in California. It was a track home. And it was really funny because I remember that day. And that was a big accomplishment for them, and Daddy being a steel union worker. But, you know, back in those days, people could make a living and they could afford the American dream if you worked hard and lived right.
That's right.
And I don't know if you can do that nowadays, because we have kids come out of a college with student loans. They're burdened. They can't live in states like California, New York, because they're so it's so expensive. I know I have two granddaughters. One lives in Tennessee. One lives in Arizona. They couldn't afford California.
Yeah, it's changed. But
I'm
sure your mom sits down, Denise, with the younger generation and speaks with them. What advice does she give the younger generation? I mean, she's 104 years old. We need to bow to her. In Hinduism, that would be the feet I'm touching and putting a flower next to it.
Yeah. I think for her, it's about closeness with family, forgiveness, and to never forget where you came from and your roots and how hard everybody worked for you so that you could have a better life, regardless of where you're family or culturally you are. But I think it does have a lot to do with culture, too, and how you're being raised. I know I've raised our children the way my parents raised me, and we're very close to our two daughters, our two granddaughters, and now we're great-grandparents. And I think another thing that keeps my mom busy is we have her home with us. We include her in everything. She loves to read. We get her the New York Times here in Connecticut. She reads the papers. She loves to paint. For her birthday, we gave her canvases and more painting utensils and whatnot. And she loves to paint still life. And we did a lot of modifications in our home so we could keep her home.
Yeah. And you were an only child. So tell us a little bit about growing up with them. Because, you know, I'm often at a loss when people have relatives that like your mom, and you have documented and been with her and spent time with her, and you could tell your children her life. But a lot of families don't do that. And you, on Facebook at times, when you put up little memories, you talk a little bit about how it was growing up as a child with such an awesome mom, that she always put you first and dressed you always so well in the nice finery.
Yes, yes.
Talk to us a little bit about growing up with this mom.
I felt with growing up with my mom and my dad, I felt I was blessed and lucky, because when we lived in New York, we lived in a beautiful area in Long Island. I was the only child, not by choice. My mother had another child in 1955, but was born underweight. Like, it was full term that he had underdeveloped lungs. He was like 4 pounds. Nowadays, that child would live. But the technology back in 1955 is not like it was. And then, unfortunately, in 1953, I was stricken with polio prior to the vaccination that came out in 55. And I was in an iron lung machine for 3 months. And my parents took me to the Presbyterian Hospital in Manhattan. And I was in a lung machine for 3 months. I was paralyzed in my entire left side. If it wasn't for the persistence and advocacy of both my mother and my dad, especially Mama, who took time off work to be with me, I don't know if I would have survived. And then she enrolled me right away in tap dancing, ballet lessons, piano lessons, and I took piano since I was in high school. And I think, boy, you know, even though we were from a different culture, they lived the American dream, and I did too. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I'm going to have Ellen jump in here and ask you something about Mama.
So part of the coolness, if you will, about having someone in your life that's that old, obviously.
104.
She has lived through depression. She has lived through. What are some of the things that she's done as a result of? Like for instance, my parents were from World War II, so I still rinse out plastic bags and like do like little savings like that, because they lived through the Depression time. What are some of the habits that your mom has that are kind of funny and reminiscent of the life that she's led?
She likes to save everything for a rainy day. And I think, I know the Depression, they didn't suffer, because she was still in Puerto Rico and they lived on a farm and by the water. So they had fresh seafood, they had cows, pigs, they were fine. But World War II affected them. And my daddy was in World War II in the army, as were my uncles and whatnot, but she didn't know my father at that time. So when she came, she didn't marry him or know him well that time. But when everything was said and done, I think it's always that sense of fear, and I think her pride in America, how they stood up for World War II and the Nazis and whatnot, and her family too, because she just had sisters, no brothers. But my dad served in World War II. I have two uncles that served three, one of them was Navy and whatnot. She holds on to that we've got to be patriotic. She doesn't lose her patriotism. She reminisces about the old days.
Yeah, and you know, Denise, I'm glad you're talking a little bit about the old days. A lot of people don't understand that Puerto Rico is part of the U.S. I've met so many people that says, oh, they're not. I'm like, please educate yourself. You could go and come freely. The Puerto Ricans helped fight in the wars to save this country. So tell us, if you can, a brief little history, because you are an educator, you know?
Yeah. Well, in 1917, Puerto Rico became a Commonwealth of the United States. Therefore, anybody born during 1917 and thereafter were automatically American citizens. And yes, that is why my father and uncle served in World War II. And two of my uncles, God bless them, have rested in Veterans Cemetery, one in Virginia and one in New York.
Yeah, and you know, oftentimes we talk about leaving a good footprint behind for this generation and the next generation. And your mama, Sally, certainly did that. So talk to us a little bit. I mean, politically, we're all watching where our country, not everyone, but there's some people that need to be taught some manners again, how to be kind, how to be respectful, how to be loving. I'm sure your mom has tips on it. What does she tell you to give back right now?
She tells me, and this is sad, to be careful, stay out of politics now. She fears. It's like a fear, like from we were fighting Germany in World War II and Adolf Hitler and authoritarianism. She fears that. She remembers hearing about all that, even though she was insulated from it all. And because they're targeting many people that weren't born here and whatnot, the poor thing, she's afraid for me when I go out.
Yeah.
I go, Mom, why are you afraid for me? She goes, because you're Spanish. And I go, but Mom, I'm an American. I was born in New York. I hardly know how to speak Spanish.
Yeah. Well, you know what? She's anxious.
She's scared for my well-being. And she tells me, oh, you take your passport with you. Mom, I refuse to do that. That is insane. And she goes, no, but you don't know. And she did vote in this last election, and it's unbelievable, like I said. But, you know, for her, it's all about being peace, being kind, loving. But even though she's 104, and I'll be 75 soon, she treats me like I'm 12 years old still.
Well, she certainly is not non-judgmental. I enjoyed spending time with Sally, and my mom did. But, you know, we always say on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, my dearest friend Denise, we say that if you have faith, family, food, finances, and a good trusted friendships, you're good.
Yes.
And we have that. But
and this is how we lead our life. I am grateful that my husband and I both had great jobs. We're retired. I am thankful that I can have my mama with me. And if a time and place comes where she needs 24-hour help or help, they will come in my home.
Yeah, talk to us about that, because you have shown all of us, your friends, how wonderful it is when a daughter decides that I will take care of my mom in my home. And it's cultural as well, because your mom did that for hers. So we have about 3 minutes left. Talk to us about the challenges of caring for someone at home. And do you take enough time for yourself as a caregiver as well?
Well, the first thing we had to do when we purchased this home in Connecticut, being that we knew she was going to be moving with us, that was she was not happy about it, but we said, too bad, so sad. I'm the only child, because she was over 100 then. And we had to make modifications in the home. She had carpeting in her room. We put wood flooring. We put a bed, a twin size bed, long twin, but we have bed rails on the side of it, but it's not a hospital bed. She has her own TV in her room. We got her a phone that has very large thing because she's hearing impaired, and we did get her hearing aids and whatnot. And that's also, like I said, we had to do modifications in our bathtub for her. My husband put up three different handrails so she could sit down and walk in. I have to make sure that I give her medications on a scheduled time in the morning and in the evening before she goes to bed. And she has sometimes sundowners where she won't go to sleep till 1, 2 in the morning, and I'm up dragging my feet because I need to give her medicines before she puts her head down for the night. I have to make sure she gets her medicine in the morning. I make sure I cook for her her three meals, even though she fights me on that. And if for some reason I need to go out or I take time for myself to go to the nail salon or go out with some ladies for lunch, I leave everything prepared, or my wonderful husband watches over her.
Yeah. And do you miss Florida? I know it took a lot out of you to leave the state of Florida because of the weather and everything, but you seem to be managing well there.
Yes, it was great. My daughter wanted us here with her. She got a job transfer and she bought a home here, and she's been here several years, and because of our age and all that, and she wanted us close by, and the Yale healthcare system here is phenomenal. My husband broke his back in 2022, and all I can say is thank God we have a healthcare system with superb doctors that really saved him from being paralyzed. My mother also, we've had two bouts where we've had to call the ambulance when she just passed out, and they found out she has heart failure and kidney failure.
Well, Denise, so, I'm sure there are times when you speak with your mom, Providencia Sally, and ask her, "Mom, you are 104 years old. Tell me, what is the meaning of life?" And when you ask her that, what does she say to you?
You know, her response to me is, she still does that, good and kind of hurtful. She goes, "I've lived a wonderful life. I'm tired. I want to go home now." And when she says, "I want to go home," she means she wants to meet her maker.
Yeah.
She says, "I'm tired of living. I hate putting you through all this. I hate being here. What am I? I'm not useful anymore." And it brings me to tears.
And she volunteered so much after she retired. She was always having a purpose to wake up and do something. I remember when you moved there, she was still a little feisty, and she had things to say about that.
She still is. You know, we both got COVID, but we were both both vaccinated, boosted, thank God. No, Mama wasn't, because she didn't believe in it, and I couldn't force her, but I should have, because I have power of attorney. But I was boosted in Vax. I caught COVID. I was sick for 3 months. This was in 2023. Mama caught COVID. She was better in 5 days.
Okay, tell us what COVID. She ate when she was growing up. That is a secret to all of this.
Okay, here's her secret. Vegetables. Of course, back in those days, there weren't all the sugary things, and everything was fresh. And even to this day, she won't eat sweets. She likes a lot of vegetables. She eats her meat. So she loves rice. I make her Spanish rice. I learned to do it her way. I'm glad she was there as an example. And we know the kinds of foods. Like this morning, she'll have her oatmeal. Or cereal.
There it is, the oatmeal. Oatmeal, an apple a day, and Jesus.
Oh, cream right. of wheat. Don't forget the cream of wheat, or not the apple, because she can't with her teeth, but she likes to eat. We get her oranges, but she crushes banana and puts it on bagels or her English muffin. But that's the way she eats, and we always get her what she likes.
She's so resourceful, and she's so creative at 104 years old. But you know, we have a minute or two left. What was Mama's first car?
I think it was a 1957 Chevy. I remember it was yellow and the top was like a blue. It was in the Bronx in New York.
Yeah, and does she have any tips for this younger generation about work ethics? Like to quit complaining and work. Does she say anything to you about this generation and how to get them working, paying their taxes, taking care of each other?
You know what? You said my mom was feisty. She's a stinker. I'm not going to tell you the words that she uses right now. So. I can't believe when I took her to the podiatrist the other day. I'm not going to say anything, but she goes, you know what, doctor? This nation is going to blankety blank, 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 blank. And she was like 101 or 2. And I'm like, mother! They laughed so hard. You know, at this stage in her life, I just let her say and be what she wants. You know?
Yes.
She's lived through so much. And she worked hard all her life. And when you have parents like that, Sita, they are your prime example. And that's what my husband and I tried to do, because my husband's father was a World War II pilot. And we both know the worst work ethics. Our parents gave us the wonderful life they gave us. And we passed that to our daughters.
Well, you and Carl are really awesome friends. And the last question is, does Mama still keep up with the cousins? I know she loved the cousins and the few relatives that are still alive. And does she still recognize them?
Absolutely. They come out here and have visited us. My two cousins, three cousins are retired. One lives in Virginia but cannot go on a plane or whatnot because of her illness and obesity issues. But my other two cousins, from California, come out and have visited us here in Connecticut. And that's another thing. Even though my mother went to college, and her youngest sibling went to college in Puerto Rico too, and lo and behold, she became an English teacher, teaching English. Can you believe that? And both her daughters, when we moved from California, from New York to California, one became a lawyer, went to Stanford Law School, and the other one has her MBA. So see, that role model that we all had during that era, I mean, was really a miracle. But that had to be instilled from her parents,
awesome,
too.
You got to write a book, Denise. You have to write a book.
And you're such an inspiration. And it's so, your family is all inspiring.
And let me close by saying, not all Hispanic people are immigrants. Not all Hispanic people are on welfare. Not all Hispanic people are in Medicaid.
That
we are like everyone else.
Yes.
We love our country. We stand up for freedom, our faith, and we work hard in our life. Just don't cut my social security.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, Denise, for calling in. It was a pleasure to hear your laugh again and to experience a little bit more of your life. We're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and worldwide on the web.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button or get any one of our archive shows from right there at that spot. And then also, we put everything on our social media as well as our website, cedamediainc.com.
Right. And you know, Ellen, that first segment brought back so many memories of friendship with Denise. Yeah. What a wonderful
lady. Her sitting right here with us. And what a smart lady. I mean, she from an education consultant standpoint, she really kept us on our toes about what was going on.
Yeah, and her mom
filled us in. I know, she's so great.
Right.
She's so great.
So our second segment, you know, I'm always finding the most wonderful guests for a show. And I booked a lovely lady named Dolores Grisalfi. I hope I'm saying it correctly. Grisalfi. Yeah.
You are.
A.K.A. Shyla Fair. And she's the author of a book called April's Heart. And Ellen, you would be proud to know she grew up in New Jersey with her brother. She was also an educator. She went to college in Washington, D.C., got her bachelor's and master's in early childhood education. And same like Denise. Today's a show for educators. Denise was also an educator. And she wrote this book, and it's all about falling in love. And how many of us fell in love in high school or junior high?
Many times, actually.
And got a heartbroken. And we lived for the boys, you know. Right. So without further ado, I'm going to go right to our guest and let Shyla tell us, well, Dolores, tell us a little bit about the conception of her story, why she wrote the book, and, you know, how and where and how long it took and all that. So welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And thank you for taking the time to support our show and call in.
Well, thank you so much, Sita. I'm so happy to be here. Yes, it's a pleasure. Yes, I hear you guys talking about having boyfriends in high school and junior high and getting your hearts broken and having had, you know, many boyfriends. And that's true with me as well, growing up in the 70s and 80s. And April's Heart is definitely reflective of that angst that you feel when you get your heart broken and you want something that you can't have. And you feel like you can't give up, but things aren't meant to be, you know, that kind of angst.
Right, you know,
and you teenagers.
Know, and parents could control, you know, what they give you to eat, your place to live. They can take you to and from your baseball, basketball, cheerleading. But parents really can't help when your emotions are raw and you have all these hormones from head to toe going through your body. And mind you, it happens to older people too. But when you're a young teenager, you can't explain it. Something weird is happening, and you have to figure out how to get over it.
That is so true. A lot of April's heart are these unanswered questions and decision making, and you know, wondering why, you know, questioning people's motives, and you know, that sort of thing, and not having a definitive answer, and even figuring out how you yourself feel about something is definitely an element of it. I mean, due to that, being young and just not having enough experience. And you know, that's definitely true with April's heart. It's that coming of age, that to watch not only April, but her main character, you know, her boyfriend, Mitch, come of age, you know, figure these things out and learn and grow. They're certainly not the same people at the end of the story that they were at the beginning when they first met. You know, so it's definitely coming of age. Yet, on the other hand, it is not for young people who themselves are coming of age. The target audience is definitely, you know, adults.
And you had a lot of friends that witnessed the struggle of April and Mitch at a time in the 80s when sex, drugs, rock and roll was like the prevailing lifestyle back then. What were some of the issues you had to face, like with your friends knowing about this relationship?
Right. So this April and Mitch is not exactly, you know, the lifelong relationship I had. I had many boyfriends, but, you know, my friends could relate. A lot of them were going through the same thing, like their own angst with their own boyfriends and dramatic breakups and, you know, who's cheating on who and things that happen of that nature. But, you know, April definitely has to deal with her friends and figure out her support system. And because as it says in the book, girls can be such bitches to each other. So you have to find where alliances lie and within your family as well. Because I think April had a dysfunctional family, much like I did, where April's mother was most likely, it doesn't say this in the book, but, you know, most likely had some kind of a, you know, needed some kind of a mental diagnosis that never happened. Like perhaps she was bipolar, you know, during a time when being diagnosed as bipolar wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she was a,
you know, back then we just thought our mothers had mood swings, and people would say, oh, you don't know which way this person is going to sway with the wind, you know?
Yes, that's exactly right. So April had to lean on her father a lot and find an alliance with him to get what she wanted a lot of times.
But, you know, the story of April being the cheerleader and Mitch being the, he was a wrestler. I would think, Ellen, that still happens today, doesn't it? But the high schoolers?
Yeah, absolutely.
The cheerleaders falls for the football guys and wrestlers, and they've got these love stories all over, I suppose, Brevard and every other state.
It's so cool because I get to see now through Facebook and through social media, some of the same couples that were in high school are still married. So I know that that exists. I know that that true love exists somewhere.
Right. So tell us a little bit now. April and Mitch found themselves in this wonderful relationship, but at some point, they had to say goodbye, and it seems as though April was the one that says it has to end.
Yes, well, the first time they broke up, it was kind of mutual. I think April was the one that said it first, but they were, like, finally happy in the relationship, but yet they were going to be going to different schools that were far away from each other. And on the mature side of them, kind of realizing their limitations, that trying to have this like long distance relationship and not going to the same school wasn't going to work out for them. That, you know, that was just something they wouldn't be able to handle. And so they called it off. But, you know, I guess they thought that their heart would follow their decision, and that proved to not be true, and they just could not really forget, you know, about the relationship and about their love. And during the first couple years of high school, you know, kept coming into each other's, their paths kept crossing. Yeah, until Mitch finally did end up at the high school that April was going to. And so the whole reason why they broke up in the first place dissipated into thin air. And so they had to rethink what they wanted moving forward.
Right. And April, yeah, and Mitch was kind of like the it couple during the junior and senior high school. And it almost like in today's world, they would be like who people are talking about on TikTok and Instagram, because young people are not on Facebook, right? Because they broke up, they came back together. Right. And at that point, the students saw that this love story was one that it was an unbreakable bond, but it didn't last.
Right, right. They had they broke up again in the middle of high school somewhere after Mitch sort of accidentally cheated on her.
Accidentally.
So there was another big breakup and another big turning point in their lives where they learned from all of that, learned about respect and grew from the process of all that and learned about forgiveness. And because it was an unbreakable bond and people make mistakes.
Yeah. So where are those two today? Where actually in today's world in 2025 is April and Mitch? Do we know?
Well, no. And when the story ends, it's several years after they've gotten married and she gives birth to their second child. So they are probably 60 years old, like me.
Yes.
With at least two children. Possibly still living in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, is where they had settled. So, you know, he became an engineer, and, you know, April had gotten her degree in business, but who knows what she was doing after raising her children. So that's unknown, but that is an interesting question, and yeah, I've been asked to write about, you know, to continue.
Well, you know,
story.
the way you wrote this book, it's a drama that's on again, off again within a relationship. And it's nice. Some authors write and it's annoying, but yours, you take the reader along with you and everybody falls in love because it brings a smile. It brings back memories of all of us when we were that age. And I remember boys liking me and I like it. I used to like a lot of people. A lot of people used to like me because I had a bit of a complex growing up because I was one of those dark skinned Indian girls. But then people started saying, "You're pretty though. You're so pretty." And I'd be like, "Oh, really? You know, you have nice hair, you know, whatever." So I do remember, you know, the boy next door, the boy waiting at the bus stop, the boy giving me his seat. I remember those things, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Right, and I think what you're talking about with you believed one thing about yourself until it was your peers that, you know, kind of changed the way you even thought about you. So, again, that's your own journey of coming of age and learning and growing, you know. And I'm glad you say that readers kind of come along with me on that journey in April's heart. Especially people who grew up in that time period, I've been told that it's like a time machine, that it really brought people back to what it was like back in high school in the 80s. And like you said, like those, you know, we were lucky back then, I think, that things were not on TikTok and Instagram and all that stuff. Like, you know, I guess we, you know, had that luxury of that kind of anonymity.
Innocence, too.
Things didn't spread. Yeah, it didn't spread around the world in half a minute, you did. So
part of the book story that I love was about the front cover and how you, the trials and tribulations you had with that front cover.
Yes.
So tell our listeners about that.
Right. Okay. So the original front cover I wanted shot in the hallway of a high school that had lockers lining the walls, as it were. If you remember how schools are like that. And I wanted, you know, my male model, you know, looking longingly at my female model, you know, April and Mitch against the lockers as had happened, like kind of depicting a scene or two from the book where they do that. And so I did. So I booked, I went through all what I thought were all the correct channels and booking a high school, setting up a location in the hallway with lockers, went through all the steps, found my models, set up a date and time for this shoot. And then the day before, I don't know why I wasn't told this sooner, but the day before I got a call saying that I needed a one-day million-dollar insurance policy to use the school in that way. And, you know, it would have been possible had I known.
Right, given a little notice.
It was too late. Yes, it was too late.
That's a lot of money. I wonder why they wanted such a high amount.
I know.
Like, oh, every place we play wants that.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a, yeah, that's kind of a normal thing. And the insurance companies, just so you know for future reference, the insurance companies do accommodate that. And it's usually like $30
right.
a day.
And it probably wouldn't have cost that much.
Right.
It wasn't that it was the million-dollar policy. It was the time factor of being able to get in touch with an insurer and secure this type of thing.
Yeah, they should have given
that
you enough
impossible.
Notice.
It
yeah.
was the day before. Right. It was exactly the day before.
Yeah. And you also produced an audiobook, which it was overwhelming as well, hiring the talent and all that. And then you decided to do it yourself. So tell us about that.
Yes, right or wrong. I mean, my husband and I decided to not pour tons of money into publishing the ebook, the paperback, and the audiobook as well. So the front cover of that, so whatever happened with the front cover was my husband ended up taking the sand dune photo right, you know, we live in Virginia Beach, so right here from our own beach, and that turned out to be the cover. And so when the fifth anniversary edition was coming out, I wanted it to be reflective of the first edition. And so I used AI to create an oil painting rendition, but it was hard. I mean, you know, you submit the photo, you put the photo in there and it's going to change it. So it kept wanting to change it to like a stormy day and that wasn't going to work. You know, I wanted it. So finally, my daughter-in-law was helping me. And she figured out what kind of clouds they were in the sky. And we specifically had to say these cirrocumulus clouds. And then voila, the oil painting rendition finally got to what I wanted it to.
That's the drawbacks of AI. One of the drawbacks, you know. So you see,
you really have to get specific.
Well, the cover makes one think about high school romances, right? And do you feel like there were benefits to having a high school romance? Like, did it help your self-esteem? I know a lot of girls do it to improve their social status. A lot of people are not finding that love and attention and admiration at home. So they say, well, they have a boyfriend and it helps. Tell us a little bit about the benefits of your high school love and romance, or middle school at that matter.
Yes, for sure. One of the discussion questions for book clubs that use April's Heart kind of addresses that in saying that, do you think that April's romance and sexual activity was partly due to the lack of love that she got from her mother? So I think, you know, April doesn't really go down that road in thinking about that so hard. But it certainly does make for a good discussion question that, you know, what's really behind why April has this passionate romance at such a young age. And I think personally me, Dolores, you know, I remember the first boyfriend that I felt kind of, you know, desperate to hang on to. A lot of the early part of April and Mitch's relationship is based on that distant memory of this guy that, you know, I wanted to be his girlfriend, but he didn't necessarily like me. And you know how that feels and all that. Right. So, you know, you certainly do live, love, and learn, you know, as they say.
I know,
sure.
People think that, people say there's positive aspects of it, and people say there's negative aspects, but you know what? I think relationships happen for a reason, and we all learn from them. We learn and grow, and I think it does help you to become a better person. If you want to look at it that way, you can. You could say, well, everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely, right. I'm not sure what the negative aspects would be, because even in a bad relationship, hopefully you're walking away with greater knowledge of, I don't know, even if it's what to avoid next time, or learning what you don't want, or, you know, I have one relationship where I look back on it and realizing as an adult how poorly this guy treated me. At the time, I didn't see it that way. I guess I couldn't see clearly about, you know, the small abuses and things I didn't have to take. But as an adult, when I look back on that, I was like, I'm like, geez, that was, you know.
Yeah, you bit the.
I don't know where
yeah.
he is now, but I hope he's treating his wife better than he ever treated me. It was.
Yeah,
it was
I know.
Not,
but you know,
it,
when you think about relationships, I remember my mom used to tell us when we were teenagers that then one of the negative aspects of it was it would be a distraction from your schoolwork. You could develop mental health issues, increase risks of, you know, being violent with the person. So, you know, culturally, because, of course, my background is Indian, as from India, they kind of sheltered us as to they don't want you to have a broken heart. They don't want you, you know, to be distracted in school. So I think that would be one of the negative aspects of it. But
yeah.
Positive aspects is you feel loved, you feel wanted, you feel like beautiful. And it, I think personally, it increases your self-esteem.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, drawbacks or being distracted from school is definitely a good point. I remember if my grades weren't good that, you know, this, you know, 1 hour every afternoon of study time up in your room by yourself, I remember that being implemented, you know, as a kind of a direct relationship to having too many other things going on to care about school
right.
that much sometimes. So,
well, we have 2 minutes left, so we have a minute left. Really quickly,
okay.
The significance of the names in the book, and where can my listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends find April's Heart?
Okay, right. Well, Mitchell Hudgens, let's start with that one, probably the most important one. Is Mitchell is my husband's name. Now, Mitchell Hudgens is not Mitch. Mitchell Hudgens is a compilation of all the significant relationships I had growing up, like I said. But I do want to point out that Mitch became the main man character's name. I asked him if it was okay. I got his permission. And, you know, writing, you know, some pretty sexual scenes and stuff like that, it just kind of felt, and knowing that April was me, it just felt safer using his name. So, and I really like the name too. It's a nice, strong name. So that's how that name is in place. April Schweder, my mother-in-law's, Mitch's mom, her maiden name was Schwedering. And she has a German background, and I have a German background. So I wanted April Schweder to be like me. So I took the name Schwedering, which is certainly a mouthful, and shortened it to Schweder. So April Schweder is her name. And the reason I used April, and I know this sounds funny, but I think there's something different between people who have a consonant as the final sound in their name and people who have a vowel as the final sound in their name.
We're going to have to move on to where we can find the book, unfortunately, because we're running out of time.
Yes, okay, that is so fine. Right, so you can find the book on Amazon exclusively, and the audiobook is on Audible as well.
Awesome.
You can check out my website, aprilsheartbook.com.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that great story and letting us all kind of reminisce about our first loves, right? It's just so awesome.
Oh, I appreciate
so
it.
So thanks again
thank
to
you.
All of our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thanks again. We tune in each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on 1510 WWBC. We'll see you next week.